We are definitely wading into the water today. Matthew tells us that Jesus comes from Galilee to the Jordan specifically to be baptized by John. John tries to stop it, though, and of course he does. He's John. He asks, "I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?" And Jesus replies, "Let it be so now, for it is proper for us in the way to fulfill all righteousness." And so John consents. Jesus is baptized. The heavens open. A spirit descends like a dove. And a voice says, "This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased." But it does beg the question, why was Jesus so intent on getting baptized? The Nicene Creed, which we will repeat, or we'll repeat a modified form, the Apostles' Creed, in a little bit, points to baptism for the forgiveness of sins. Jesus doesn't need cleansing, though, and as far as we're told, he's sinless. So what's he doing? He's baptized because baptism is an outward sign of belonging. It marks someone as part of the family of God. And yes, he is the Son of God, but Jesus, who is fully God, chooses this particular sign because he is also fully human. He doesn't hover somewhere above humanity. He enters into it. He submits to it. He stands in line with everyone else, shoulder to shoulder, in the muddy water. The incarnation means that God does not love humanity from a distance. God puts on flesh, or as is more literal in the Greek, God became fleshy and meaty, meaty God. The divine has skin and muscles and bones. God becomes touchable. You can poke him, but also sweaty and vulnerable. God takes on that fullness of humanity with all of its loveliness and all of its mess. And this mess means that God is never distant from our world, from those reeling from the death of Nicole Good, or the fear carried in the bodies of people in Venezuela, or the disquiet in the hearts of Iranians, or from the quiet grief of families burying loved ones in Switzerland. God wades into that mourning and terror and sorrow alike and stands knee-deep in it with us, absolutely refusing to love from afar. Now, if you've ever been there, you know that the Jordan River today, it's quite frankly disgusting. It's polluted. It's riddled with flies. It's choked by runoff and waste. It's a far cry from the pristine, sparkling waters that we sometimes see in religious art or might imagine in our minds. But even in Jesus' day, this was not some shiny baptismal font. It was a working river. A boundary river. It was a river that had history and grit and danger. And it was muddy and it was murky. And I think we would look at it by our standards today and say that it looks far more like a drainage ditch than a river, even 2,000 years ago. But God chooses this dirty water. Remember, Jesus was born in the dirt and the straw in the manger, not in some lavish palace. And his ministry likewise begins in full immersion, not in purity and separation. God goes right to where the water is ugly. God goes to where the people are. Even if that means where people are trying as hard as they can, imperfectly, to begin again. And then of all things, a dove flutters down upon his head. Let's be honest, though, for a second. A dove is a pigeon. A white pigeon, maybe, but it's still a pigeon. A bird that we may politely tolerate at best, or actively despise at worst. We've nicknamed them flying rats. That can't be good. What would you do if a pigeon flew at your head? Now, I've had them poop on my head a couple times. I've swatted them away, but never once have I thought, yes! This is exactly what I want on me right now. And yet this is the sign of God's Spirit. Now, over my daughter's Christmas break, we rewatched Home Alone 2. I hope you've seen it. But there is one character, the bird lady, played by Brenda Fricker. And Kevin is freaked out by her. Kind of rightfully so. She's a bit intimidating. She lives in the filth of Central Park. She's surrounded by birds on her shoulders, on her head. She looks like she probably smells a little. She's disheveled. She makes him deeply uncomfortable. In fact, he screams and runs away when he first comes in contact with her. But later, he learns her story. He realizes that she is kind, she's wounded and lonely and worthy of love. Now, from the beginning, Jesus doesn't recoil from the bird ladies of the world. He doesn't cross the street to avoid them. He lives fully into the most inaccessible places of humanity, the places we would probably rather not go. The people we'd probably rather not touch, and the realities we'd probably rather not see. And God calls all of that, all of it, beloved. Now the Spirit descends not as some sort of a golden eagle or a flash of lightning, but as a dove, a glorified pigeon. Which, by the way, was a temple sacrifice that was affordable to the poor. And I don't think this is accidental. The revelation seems clear. This is a God who sides with the poor and the oppressed. A God who does not confuse holiness and cleanliness. A God that does not confuse power with distance. This is the same God who is sovereign, who is enthroned in heaven, surrounded by cherubim and seraphim and incense and ceaseless praise, who steps down into the muck, into flesh, into filthy water, into a fragile human body that will hunger and ache and bleed, and die. This is radical. It flips the world order on its head. It says God is not found primarily outside of the world, but in deep solidarity with it. God demonstrates that dignity doesn't come from perfection, from belonging. Jesus shows that baptism is not about being good enough or clean enough or correct enough, but it's simply about being claimed by God. This is my beloved, the voice says. Not because Jesus has accomplished anything yet, because he hasn't. He hasn't preached, he hasn't healed, he hasn't died or risen, but simply because he belongs. And the ripples of that moment are still spreading. They ripple every time the church chooses presence over safety. Every time we stand with those that the world dismisses. Every time we insist that God's love is not reserved for the tidy or the rich or the respectable. And in baptism, we are marked the same way. Not with superiority, but we are marked with solidarity. We're not sent away from the mess of the world. Actually, we're sent into it. We're called to carry the light of Christ with us into the polluted rivers and the broken systems and the wounded lives in our world. We are not the saviors. But we are called to be reminders that our Savior has already gone there ahead of us. And thanks be to God, that changes everything.